Welcome to TSW After Dark Side. First you get the money. Then you get the fully armed and operational battle station. Then you get the women. Hoo-ha!
So I think I might be getting bored with Game of Thrones.
I was bored with the Game of Thrones from the first episode.
Yeah, I remember you saying. My thing is, it's not so much that the show is boring. The problem I've got with it in this series is that there's stuff in there that's interesting, but they space it out weird in the places that it's placed in weird situations. So I'll give you a kind of an overarching thing without, I can do it without going into spoilers, so that works out well.
Okay.
There's a scene where a character comes back who's been out of the series for ages, and you've heard them mentioned, but you haven't really known what's going on with them.
Right.
So they've been talked about, and they've been speculated that they're left for dead and stuff. But you've seen signs that they are about. But you've seen signs that it's pretty clear they haven't been about in a while. So you're kind of led to believe that the character's dead. And in the latest episode, they turn up out of the blue at the point where, like, you don't expect it to happen. And they put it halfway through the episode.
Right.
Yeah, it's... Just unannounced. And then, yeah, just they sort of, you know... Basically, it's the sort of it's the spin-over from the previous episode, which was really good. And was really quite powerful, very emotional, and a lot of people really, really got affected by it, because obviously that's what happens with Game of Thrones. People get really het up about the change, and the characters get killed off and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
It's the end of that, and this is what's made it worse. The end of that episode is really, really boring. So it just makes you think, you've got this really good sudden surprise. Why not stick that at the end of the episode?
It's not like
they didn't. Yeah, they didn't do anything with that storyline after it was revealed that the character was like, oh, you know, we thought you were dead and stuff like that. And he explains. I've given it a bit of a spoiler by saying it's a he, but that doesn't really narrow it down in Game of Thrones.
No.
He sort of goes into a bit of depth about how he's been able to stay about. And beyond that, there's no more dealing with it. There's no further action on that storyline that I remember. And if I don't remember it, it's probably, and it did happen, it just shows it's a bit dull. But it's just they're making weird choices about how to organize stuff.
This is the first season where they haven't had books to work from, is that right?
Yes, it is. It's right. The one where, so this is the series that I think George R.R. Martin described it when he seems to be the only person who's still using LiveJournal. And he put up a post about how the books wouldn't be ready in time for the TV show, so there would be certain elements that would go ahead of the books, and certain stuff would kind of go alongside. Although they have made changes, and there's characters in the books that haven't turned up in the series. Whether they will or not is anybody's guess. But there are characters and takes on characters that haven't turned up in show, mainly because, as we've talked about many times before, it's not entirely easy to please people by straight up adapting the books.
No,
because they'll just go, oh, I know this story, I've seen it before,
and you'll never hit precisely what they've imagined, will you? You'll never capture that experience that somebody has, an innately personal experience with a book. And if you try and replicate, the most recent experience I've got of this, I think, is The Martian.
Yeah.
Where I made a conscious decision last year to read The Martian rather than see the film. So I had to ignore the film when it came out.
Yeah.
Read the book when I was away, and was profoundly affected by that book. I really connected with it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I need to read it because I've never read it.
one of the most, I've probably built it up way too much now, but it's one of the most enjoyable books I've read ever, I think. Mm-hmm. And
high praise indeed.
When I saw the film, I loved the film, but I was left thinking, I'm so glad I read that book. Because if I went to the book after having seen the film, it would have robbed me of so much. It would have detracted more from the book than the book did from the film, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I did it that way around. So there was no way on earth anyone was going to be able to film that book and capture everything.
Yeah.
Capture that experience for me. It just wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm sort of the opposite mentality. I tend to see the film and then read the book to see what was done better in the book and what was done better in the film. And there are some things like have you seen The Prestige, right? The Chris Nolan magic movie. Yeah.
Indeed.
Which the book is very different. But they're both good in their own ways. But the book is very different to the film in terms of events and how they play out and stuff.
Right.
But actually there's room for both because they're sufficiently different. And even I think it's Christopher Priest. I'll have to double check that, but I'm pretty sure it's Prestige. Christopher Priest, the original. And he, when they interviewed him about it, he said, there's stuff I would have liked to do, you know, myself in the book had I seen the film, you know, had I sort of worked with the film, I actually quite like a few of the things they did. I would have done that in my book had I thought of it. I like when that sort of thing happens. It's when it's kind of certain. There's a certain respect for art, isn't there? In that, in that mentality of like, just because it's not the original work, it doesn't necessarily mean it's in any way less. They come to it from a kind of mutual respect of, you know, this is a talented director. Let's see if I can learn something from him.
Yeah, and they bring,
you know what I mean?
The different mediums bring with them certain attributes that the other will never be able to have, never be able to possess. Yeah,
exactly. You know,
certainly, I mean, with the shortcuts films can take.
Yeah, we talked about the Harry Potter series last week, didn't we? And some of the shortcuts they took is nothing short of incredible, especially as it doesn't necessarily need 2 seconds in dialogue to add something in that explains it. But, you know, at the same time, I'm not a director or a famous writer, so I'm not the best person to ask.
It's that I've tried my hand at writing, and although I find the process enjoyable, it's incredibly difficult to try.
I can imagine. Yeah,
just try and lay down everything that you, because I've got another project going on at the moment with another group of people that I'm collaborating with on something. And
okay, cool.
I'm finding it really difficult to get it into gear. I'm finding it because I'm just not, you know, I have ideas for what I want to lay down, and then I don't know how to structure. I don't know how to get there. It's very difficult.
I see. Yeah, I see.
Very difficult. And even though, if I get a roll on, like when I'm writing something on the site, I can suddenly end up at a couple of thousand words without stopping. And realise that I've just basically written a deposition on something, and then it's going back and trimming it down and getting it to a point where people are going to want to read it. Because
I've done the same, actually.
People don't want to sit and, you know, they don't want to do that, do they?
No, I've done the same, actually, recently. We were talking about Prime Video before we started recording Talk Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I've been watching Bosch.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to start that, actually.
It's brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm going to do a sort of a bit more detail. I've written the piece up for Emotionally 14, and it will go up at some point next week, I would have thought. So by this week, by the time, obviously, that this goes out. But it's, you know, it's just a really good kind of old school detective. But it's really cool because it rings true for me a lot, because it's an old school thinker trying to get their way in the modern world with all the kind of bureaucracy and red tape that comes with the modern policing system in obviously in that sort of fictional LA. Not suggest. I don't know how accurate it is in terms of comparison to the real LAPD. Probably they'll probably do the basics in terms of establishing what's correct and stuff. I wouldn't imagine it's like a, you know, I don't imagine it's an exhaustive comparison. But yeah, it's just a really good show. You know, it's like I say, the reason I like it is because I've often been described when I'm at work and in other respects as kind of a bit of an old school thinker. And it's interesting, especially when you work in big companies, which I've done a few times in the past, how old school thinkers tend to get a little bit sort of bogged down in politics and the additional crap that comes with it, you know, the stuff of the sort of soft skills of the job, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of that in there, you know, that struck a chord with me. That's the word I've been looking for, struck a chord. been sitting there for 5 minutes trying to think of it. And finally got it. It is late, yeah. I'd almost swore there and then I stopped myself, but it's after Darkseid. I can do it, but no need. If I don't need to, I might as well not. But definitely, if you're going to check out a new show, I definitely recommend Bosch. I'm going to download the second series onto my new iPod and load it on and use it for my commute, because I was using, we were talking about it before, but I'll sort of retread, sorry for the listeners, I was, I've been replacing my tech as I go along recently, where I've had a bit of, you know, I've been saving up and replacing tech. So I've had an iPad for about 4 or 5 years, I think. It's an iPad 2, so it's quite an old one. And I saw a good deal on the Air 2, which is sort of more modern. Still not the most recent one, because obviously the Pro is now the more recent one. Although by the time this podcast goes out, that might have changed. Yeah. doubt it very much, but you never
Pro,
know.
With, the Pro will be the small one, and it will be slow.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I picked up an Air 2, and I was going to sell my iPad 2 to a bloke at work who sent it off to a charity thing. And was using it back and forth on the commute, because obviously if it broke, it's a shame, but it was still my property. So if it broke, it would suck, but you know, it wouldn't have been the end of the world.
Mm.
So I was watching. So basically I loaded on the series. The only thing I'm wary of now is, although this iPod's got a better screen resolution than the iPad 2, it's obviously a lot smaller. So I'm going to have to get used to the fact that it's a much bigger screen I was used to working with. And now I've got the little iPod screen, which I think is about 4.5 inches.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was 9.7 inch. So
you'll see.
I'll have to get used to that.
I'm sure I will. It won't take very long at all. I used to watch stuff on an iPod video on flights.
Oh, wow,
before
the iPad
came out.
Yeah. As I say, this is what I like the iPod Touch, is because you get all the video functionality on it. It's good. One thing actually that's really cool is, I'll give a kudos to the Apple staff for their honesty. He basically told me that unless you buy the black one, you have the chance that you might spend more time being focused on the frame than on the actual image on the screen, because it's got a white frame around the outside. If you're going to watch videos on it, he said you're actually better off buying the black one, which comes with a black outer sort of fascia, because you're going to concentrate more on the object on the screen rather than the outside frame.
Yeah,
that was quite black. I was pleased with that. Because
black helps your eyes with contrast as well.
So that was my thinking too.
Mm.
That was my thinking, because I've done a bit of research about contrast when I was buying a new TV. So
yeah,
did a little bit of research on that. Although I did end up buying a cheap one, so I don't know actually how whether or not I actually made use of that research.
Obviously, did some research on your bank account as well.
Oh yes,
and how quickly this technology dates.
Always has to be researched very quickly, but very swiftly before I do anything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same. I have to do that before I consult Boots about buying a meal deal.
Can I afford to get the olives as well?
Or yeah.
Am I just going to be better off just buying the drink and just, you know, starving?
Yeah, and just pretending to eat something. I just need to recommend one thing that I've binge watched since we last recorded. Since we last did an After Dark Side. Bloodline on Netflix.
All right.
I've just finished season 2. I did season 1 earlier in the year.
Okay, what's that
season
about?
Season two hit on Friday last week, and we're done with it already. It's basically it's a thriller.
Ben Mendelsohn.
It's Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh, and Linda Cardellini as well. She's gorgeous.
She is gorgeous, and she's fantastic. And there
she is brilliant.
There isn't a bad performer in this show. In fact, they brought a young actor came into the show. In fact, he impacted on me so much. I'm gonna actually look up his name.
Yeah,
so I can give him the proper respect. Bear with me, Bloodline. Yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough.
Okay, well, I'll thoroughly check it out.
Enjoyed it, and you will get through. There's 23 episodes, I think, in total. Just trying to find the cast. I don't like the way. I don't think IMDb is very well laid out. Let's have a look.
It has its moments in certain respects where it's not great.
Right, this guy, his name is Owen Teague.
Okay.
And he plays Nolan Rayburn. He plays Ben Mendelsohn's son in the show. He's incredible. The character is infuriating.
Yeah.
I just love this show, and I was so disappointed when we got to the final episode the other night, and I didn't realise it was the final episode until we got close to the end. I thought, this is wrapping up, and I'm really, really disappointed.
Yeah, that happened with me with the first X-Men movie, the first Bryan Singer one. I went to see it with my dad, and we were sat there watching it, and we got to the point where we said, it looks like it's about to pick up credits. There's the bit where at the very end, Magneto and Professor X are playing chess in that sort of prison thing, the little plastic prison. And we were like, I think it's about to pick up. And then it was credits. And we didn't realize, because we're enjoying the film so much, we didn't realize that 2 hours had passed.
Yeah.
It's a mark of a good film, really, is when that
happens. Have you seen Apocalypse?
I haven't. No, I really want to because it's Oscar Isaac, isn't it?
Yeah.
As Apocalypse, which is it's one of those casts I didn't quite spot at first, but now I've seen it.
I saw it. Crawled. I didn't like it.
Oh, really? What was wrong with it? In your mind?
Everything. Mostly that it was in front of my eyes was the biggest problem I had with it.
Wow, that's a front.
It's definitely my issue. I don't think the film is objectively bad. I think it's probably there's too much CGI stuff going on. My pet peeve these days seems to be cutting to a wide shot and then having tons of tiny little things going on with all this.
Yeah.
All these little, what's the term they use in CG animation where they have all these tiny little microscopic elements sort of shooting around the screen doing all these things, like bits of dust and things being taken down. Yeah. Particulation. I cannot stand it.
Okay. Do you find, it's a question for you actually, because this ties into a sensation I noticed when I was growing up. Do you find that if you've done any kind of study of media, you find it difficult to enjoy it for its own sake? That you start to analyze it critically in more depth and it kind of spoils the fun of doing things for doing things for pure enjoyment.
Yeah, I do have.
It's like the example I'd use is when I was growing up, I did GCSE. Everybody had to do GCSE English in my school, and I did so much analysis of novels that there was a couple of year period where I couldn't read for fun because I would always be. I'd always have that kind of brain pattern engaged. To just do the same.
You're not the first person I've heard say that.
Yeah, and I had a film student friend when I was at uni in the first year. He did film and American studies, something like that. It's English literature and American literature. And he was watching a lot of films as a result, and he was saying that he was driving his other friends mad watching films with him because he was just analysing them and scrutinising them out loud because that's what they were used to doing.
Yeah,
but, you know, it makes me wonder if there's a certain, you sort of put yourself in a certain state mentally when you start to engage in these things on a regular basis. Like Star Wars speculation, we do it all the time now as in a second nature to us, but it probably didn't start off that way.
No. No, and I've gotten quite adept at being able to divorce my analysis of Star Wars and my theorizing of Star Wars from my actual experience of it. So when I launched Talk Star Wars a couple of months before The Force Awakens came out, but even when I was on Movie Geeks Film News, I had a thing called This Week in Star Wars that I was doing on the run-up, like a year or so before, and I was consuming every little piece of media, spoiling everything. And when I sat down to watch the film, it all went away.
Yeah.
And the credits roll started, you know, the roll up, the crawl at the start started. And I thought, oh, here we go. This is a Star Wars film. And I was completely disengaged from everything I'd taken on up until that point. I just accepted the film from frame one on its own terms. I so enjoyed it. And I don't know how I managed to do that, because I went into, like, you know, going to X-Men Age of Apocalypse knowing a little bit too much and not getting so much out of it. But then the day before, I saw Civil War and completely and utterly enjoyed that film. And I knew everything that was going to happen in it.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant movie. I really loved Civil War. I really liked the Captain America storyline that they do.
Mm.
And the Russo brothers
who do those films? Yeah, they're really good. Yeah,
they're really, really good. But yeah, I heartily endorse Captain America movies. They're my favourites of the individual Avengers storylines. I've never really gone for Iron Man, Thor, the Hulk. They've never really resonated for me. It's always been I like Captain America quite a bit.
No, see, Iron Man was what was my way in. That was my. I think I probably would have struggled if Cap had been the first one up. I might not have engaged quite so readily.
Fair enough.
But Iron Man wasn't even really very important to me in the comic books. Spider-Man was always my poison in comic books. But Iron Man, I think it's probably the tech, and being a bit of a techie myself. That I found that all very seductive. And I just love Tony Stark. I love Robert Downey. I don't know if there has ever been a pairing of character and actor so singularly perfect before.
Yeah.
With possible exception of Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's some people are just meant to play certain roles, even though they might not know it yet. They're just, you know, they're just born for that sort of thing. Like, you've seen High Fidelity?
Yes, yeah.
I can't picture anybody else but John Cusack in that title, in that lead role.
No, you're right, yeah.
He's just perfect in that, you know, in that position.
It was Nick Hornby book, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've read the book as well. And it's really, really good.
Which is strange, because he's a Brit, isn't he, the character?
He is. But it's all set in England, I think, in High Fidelity. But it's all, it's moved to America. I don't know where in America. I can't think.
Yeah, but they're all proto hipsters, aren't they, in the movie?
Yeah, exactly. They're just, but at the same time, that, you know, it sort of fits. You know, makes sense. I'm trying to find. I always find it interesting to look at the trivia for movies and see who else was in line for the role.
Well, Tom Cruise was in line for Iron Man, for Tony Stark, I believe.
Really? Okay. I think that might have worked still.
Have you ever read Extremis, the graphic novel?
No.
Right. Firstly, immediately resolve that, because that is Extremis. It's a breathtaking, absolutely breathtaking. But they tried to do it in Iron Man 3. Story arc. It's an Iron Man story arc, and it is absolutely stunning, and it's beautifully illustrated, and it's quite clear at that point that Cruise was the model for Stark in that comic book.
Okay, interesting.
And they tried to do, they kind of took a weak pass at Extremis in Iron Man 3. They didn't do it justice.
Oh, of course, yeah, because it's the name of the, it's a military faction, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Much the way Civil War, the movie is divorced from Civil War, the book. It's yes. the same thing with the extremists in Iron Man 3 and the extremist okay. storyline in the book. So you'll get a lot out of that. It's kind of what we said earlier about The Martian, the film compared to the book. I read Extremist before I saw Iron Man 3. So okay. I saw the superior version of it, I think.
Yeah.
In comic book
I
form.
Doing that. Okay. So yeah, some stuff
I highly recommend that. Nicely.
Okay, I'll check it. I've got I've just loaded up my Comixology account, so I'll whap it on my wish list
and yes.
wait for the next time they reduce. I just find digital pricing on a lot of media is, to me, seems a bit off.
Yeah, it's a bit obscene.
And I mean, if you look at, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. So Extremis, I'm just looking it up now. And for, I think it's books. six to eight books, it's £7.50 for a digital copy.
Yeah.
Which to me, it just seems like a bit much. Now, I appreciate, because yeah. I know at least one person, my friend Brad, will be sitting there listening to this thinking, Marvel Unlimited, £10 or $10 a month. But I can't go for a subscription if I don't think I'm going to get to it much. I mean, I'm already paying for Netflix. I'm already paying for Amazon Prime. Audible. I've got an Audible one credit a month thing.
Yeah.
And I don't get time to engage with the media that I have on those things. This is why, I mean, this is one of the reasons I never go for piracy. Not just because of the, you know, I kind of go for it on a, I object to it slightly on a moral ground as well, but also, when would I even have the time? I don't have the time to catch up on the stuff I am paying for legally.
No, that's right.
Let alone to then add other stuff into the mix. I'd be all over the shop. I'd never sleep.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, I'm less engaged with film now than I ever have been because the quality of the TV that I'm getting through services like Netflix, Amazon Prime, and then the stuff that hits TV, most notably on Sky Atlantic, I'm getting such good quality stuff there. I would rather sit and watch a series like Bloodline or yeah. Better Call Saul was the one that I did just before that.
I've never seen Breaking Bad.
Oh, well, you need Rob, you need to sort some stuff out.
I've been told this a lot.
Have you seen Sopranos?
No.
Right, you're fired. Go and watch these things.
Which one should I watch first?
They're landmarks. Chief. Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, Breaking Bad, because it's a much shorter run, so you'll get to the end.
All right. Oh, yeah, Sopranos is like 10 seasons or something.
Yeah, and I think they're quite long seasons compared to Breaking Bad. I think a couple of Breaking Bad's quite short.
Are they on Netflix?
Breaking Bad is on Netflix,
Is it on Amazon? That would suit me based on our conversation. If anybody from Netflix is listening, I know they're talking about digital offline downloads.
Yeah.
So get on it because I definitely want it.
Yeah,
and it would be great.
There's so much out there now. I'd much rather. I mean, in the past few weeks, we've downloaded and binge watched a show called Billions, which just hit Sky Atlantic.
Oh, another one. Yeah, is it Damian Lewis?
Yeah, Damian Lewis and Paul Giamatti.
Great.
Breathtaking.
They're both
show.
Great.
We went straight off the back of that into Better Call Saul, which every time I move from one show to the next, I sometimes find it difficult to shift gears. And it's almost like I need
a
buffer show, like a palate cleanser. But this time, I went for, I don't know whether it's, the two shows aren't in any way similar. But I managed to transition from Billions into Better Call Saul without any problem whatsoever, and then straight out of Saul into Bloodline Season 2. And I just feel like I've watched days and days worth of glorious entertainment where I could sit and, even if I watched back-to-back every film that's been released recently, the rate of satisfaction, the return for that investment, I'm not going to get it.
Right.
Not going to get it.
Yeah.
So 2.5 hours I spent watching Civil War, and that's the greatest experience in the cinema since The Force Awakens.
Okay.
And, you know, I sat here now and watched three TV shows back-to-back, binge-watched three shows back-to-back, and got such a quality experience out of it.
Our one is we keep watching Hell's Kitchen, me and Jen.
Oh,
it's just really enjoyable. It's really compelling because it's just so stupid. Yeah, it's Ramsay. Yeah, it's the one where it's like the elimination show, and it's about the sort of crowning the next head chef at one of his restaurants.
Yeah.
Rather than, because Kitchen Nightmares is the other one we like, but it's not on.
Yeah.
If it's on Netflix, we haven't found it. But that's the one about going to visit crap restaurants and making them not crap. I love that one too. Yeah, I love that one too. But the Hell's Kitchen's great because I just really enjoy watching him shout at people. And then afterwards, them either going sort of, you know, well, fuck that guy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. What does he know? He's only a Michelin. Is he a Michelin? He must be a Michelin.
Michelin-starred multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
Chef, yeah. What would he know?
He holds 16 Michelin stars. He's been awarded. Yeah, his restaurants have been awarded 16 Michelin stars in total and currently hold 9.
Wow.
Got 9 Michelin stars among all his restaurants. That's
goodness me. And I bet
outrageous.
I bet the rest of the stars that have gone because the restaurants have gone and not because the standards have gone. He's probably shut restaurants down.
I would have thought so, yeah. I mean, he strikes me as a pretty smart dude.
Yeah.
I actually really like him as well. I think he's probably quite a decent bloke.
Yeah. I think
once
he's pretty
past all the sort of screaming.
Down to earth. Yeah, that's all for TV.
He's just very he's got that passion for TV, yeah, but I think it strikes me as a pretty stand up dude, you know.
Yeah, I think he
strikes me as the kind of person I'd like to know.
Self made.
They're very much, I think that's the impression I get. I've not really done research in that side of things, but who knows? I'm just thinking, Mark, incidentally, I'm just looking at Talk Star Wars, as the listeners should as well. TalkStarWars.co.uk. It's a wonderful website.
Indeed.
And on there, I've just noticed that you should call, if you do future installments of this sort of, you know, your take on a piece of news, you should call it A Certain Point of View.
Oh.
Give it a Star Wars twist.
Oh, I like that.
Plus, obviously, we know we've got it before it goes out, so you know, you've got the opportunity to set it up if you want. If you have a chance, well, yeah, that too. But if you have a chance in the meantime to write something new, then obviously,
you got that
opportunity.
Yeah, but,
that's my feeling.
Usually, I would slap the insights banner on that thing, but mostly that
it's kind of
piece was just opinion was op-ed.
Yeah,
it wasn't. I didn't do a lot of research in it, so the stuff I said about the Anakin Obi-Wan. Thing was just through my interpretation. I hadn't bothered doing any research into it. It was, as I mentioned in the piece, it's all opinion. It's all opinion based.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
And it's not really about being right or wrong. It's about saying this is the motivations behind making those decisions during pickups.
Yeah, maybe instead then call it My Certain Point of View.
Oh, I like
kind
a certain
of
point
the,
of view.
Mix the two.
I think it works.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
I'll do that. I think Jeremy's going to be writing a bit more now because he started his post that went up this week. We were the last 17.
Which one was his?
He put up a thing about action figures because he's starting to rebuild his collection.
I saw. Yeah, it's pretty. It's pretty great.
It's really addictive. Like just watching him going after these things, and he keeps sending me links.
I can relate to that. So I've talked on the show before about my collection of HeroClix, the little miniature figures. And I had the opportunity I started it on the bank holiday weekend, but I didn't have a lot of time to do it. So I've sort of been on and carried on doing it. The count is, let's have a look. If you exclude the stuff that I've put to one side, which is going on, which has not been unboxed yet because it's part of a YouTube video, I have 506.
Wow.
And that's not including the ones that I've already earmarked for selling because I already know I've got doubles of them. So of those, I think, let's have a look. Got 34 that are doubles in that collection. So there's about 480 figures which are unique in some way, whether it's the sculpt is unique or the power dial is unique. Right. I have 480 of them. And then there's another 210 in the unboxing queue. But I've had a little bit of a setback. So actually people who listen to Talk Star Wars and Emotionally 14 will maybe have seen me rant about it on Twitter. But basically, the video software I was using was a software called TrackAx. And it was a bit complicated. And I'd spoken to friends about it who found it a bit bizarre when I was describing to them how certain functions work. They said, oh, that doesn't work like, you know, Premiere or other programs like it. So I don't really understand why it does it that way, and it seems a bit, doesn't really make a lot of sense. And it was sort of encouraging me to use other stuff. But I persevered, and I got used to it to a point where I could do the stuff I wanted to do really easily. And I actually got into a really good rhythm with like reusing project files, tweaking them and turning over videos much quicker. And then I upgraded the hard drive in my laptop. So I upgraded it to a solid state drive, which I do not regret in the slightest. It's a fantastic upgrade, and it makes the bloody thing fly, and I love it. It's also a lot more stable because I clean booted Windows 10 onto it rather than having an upgrade version, which was a bit temperamental, I'll say that. So I came to reloading all my software on, and I put my audio software on for recording podcasts, and that went on without any problems. So I was like, oh, result, everything's going fine. I get to the video software, and the license key comes back with an error. So I thought, oh, well, maybe it's because I've used it on one computer. Even though it says I should have two licenses, maybe it's a problem with it, and I've done it wrong and accidentally registered the same computer twice or something like that. So I wrote them a support ticket. It went for a fortnight without any reply, during which time the trial period was winding down. So I basically cleared through, and I plowed through everything I'd started in TrackX, and I finished off and rendered everything. So I have about, I think I ended up with a dozen videos, which were done over the course of about 3 days. I just blitzed it because I knew that I didn't have a lot of time left. And I even emailed the lead developer on the project, because he emailed me when I first downloaded the trial to say, oh, you know, if there's anything I can do to make your videos better, then feel free to pick my brains. And I was like, all right, well, I need his brains. So I wrote him an email a long time after he'd originally messaged me, but I figured he'll reply because he seemed like a pretty cool bloke. Nothing. So I've since learned that it seems increasingly likely that the company's gone bust and it's just kind of seeing out the domain name and then just disappearing into the wind.
Yeah.
Which is a pisser, because it means I've got to learn a completely new software from scratch in order to proceed with any video work, which is a shame. Especially as there was supposed to be a video going up with the next E14 Gamecast, and it's thrown it into doubt, whereas before I was like, oh, I can knock this out, no problem. I didn't get the video files in time to knock it together. So I've basically got, I suppose I'm going to try and get the other one, the next podcast, up in the next fortnight. So I've basically got 2 weeks to learn how to use a brand new video editing software and turn together a project in time to release it alongside the podcast.
What a nightmare.
That should be entertaining, I would think.
Shame you can't get to iMovie. I just introduced Steve to iMovie and he loves it.
I have it on the iPad. Now, here's a question for you. Can it do picture-in-picture?
The Mac version can. I don't know if the iPad can.
There you go. I don't know. I'll give it a go. I've basically downloaded trial versions of loads of different stuff, and I'm going to tinker with them all. I think I don't know if I showed you last week when we were recording, I downloaded this thing called HitFilm Express. And no. It does look really robust. I think the problem is it's too much bang for my use.
Yeah.
Too much bang for my buck by a
You'll grow
long
into
shot.
That, though. You'll grow into it.
You'd hope, but I think it's when it says, you know, do you want an editor or a compositor? And we say you should be able to have both. And I'm like, what the fuck is a compositor? I think that's the sign that it's not built for my needs.
Right.
When I don't understand one of the two things it does.
Yeah.
But incidentally, on a related subject, if listeners who are creatives, who are any good with video editing, can recommend me something that's cheap and or free, I would be very, very grateful to get, you know, to get a list of things to try out. Because, you know, I'm giving it a go with the stuff I've downloaded. So I've got a copy of Premiere Elements. I've got Sony's version. I've got HitFilm. I've got Blender, which is far too complicated. I can't even figure out how to get to the fucking view. It's because it's a proper animating software with a video editor built in. But it's not a video editor. It's a piece of software that happens to have one in it.
Yeah, that's too much.
It's, yeah, that's far too much. That's way too much bang for my buck. Although I imagine for the people who use it, it's fucking great. Because it's a it's an open source project. I think it's built in, you know, it's built in open source, so it's, you know, a huge community of people contributing to it and trying to make it better and improving, fixing bugs and shit like that. So it's always nice when you see a project like that, a huge community behind it, because you know that if you start using it and you run into a problem, you've got a really good chance of finding somebody who knows, who's encountered that, who's encountered that problem and has a fix, or knows where to sort of where to steer you in order to sort of get the answer you want.
Yeah. Well, if you do have a suggestion for Rob in terms of
editing software,
send it to talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com.
Talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. Message me on Twitter at RobWadeVision.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be ranting about it on there in the next couple of weeks. I'm sure I'll sit there and go, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, someone will give you a really nice piece of software now, a nice, easy recommend, something that's straightforward to use.
Wouldn't it be amazing if somebody who's a listener of ours has written one? Wouldn't be incredible? One of those wonderful, it's a small world after all kind of situations where somebody, you know, I work for Adobe, let me sort you out, that sort of thing.
That'd be brilliant. So that would be brilliant. On that note as well, if we got anyone that listens that works for Aston Martin, if you could just send me some keys in the post, that would be greatly appreciated. Right, I'm going to have to call it quits now, mate, because my clock is ticking and I've got to get up stupid o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, fair enough, mate. I'll let you go because I could easily go for a couple more hours, but I think that's not fair on you.
No, because you'll keep talking and it'll just be a subtle little snore, or I'll hit all the keys with my face like I did when I was writing show notes last week.
Ah, well remembered.
Yeah. All right, thanks for listening to the After Dark Side, everyone. We'll bring Naked Steve back with us next time.
Yeah, it does feel less naked in here.
It does, which is surprising because I'm reasonably naked myself. Right, see you next week.
All right, cool. Thanks, guys.